You know, I didn't think I could get excited for a basic human model anymore.
Webway has finally brought you here. Behold, Forge the Narrative.
Hey everybody, welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host. We're all about All Souls Podcast. I'm joined by Adam Camilleri.
Evening, everybody. Hope you're having a good day.
Tanya Gates and Red Powell.
Hey everybody.
What up?
It's Tyranid time. It is Tyranid time. First codex of the brand new edition.
What's some would say an unenviable position. In the lexicon of the game, I say enjoy your brand new, spicy, incredible models, and let's get stuck into this edition proper.
There are, like, can we talk about the models for a second? Because there are some really cool things coming out. The Norn Emissary, which we'll talk about. I've built it. I've painted it.
Oh,
it went together like a dream. The whole thing built in less than an hour.
Can I just say, I was very sad to see the legending of what I previously thought was the most iconic and best-looking Tyranid Gribbly, the Dimecheron. Envisioning everything that I loved about Tyranids when I was a kid, in that they were very Geiger-esque in that kind of edition of the game, and then they transitioned into this. It was an incredible model. And the Norn is like the next generation of that concept, taking it even further into the IP of Tyranids, away from that, but still like resonating with everything I love about the faction. It's so freaking good.
It's a dual kit. You can build the adversary also in there.
The assimilator or the emissary, yeah.
That's right. That's right. The assimilator, yeah. And there's Death Leapers coming out, which is cool. Also, that's one of the ones that, like, one of the brand new previewed models. We can talk
Looks
about
really
that a
good.
Little bit. Yeah. Lictor. The Lictor is, you can build the Lictor in different poses. And that one was a little bit tricky. We can talk about that if we talk about its rules and stuff too. When I say a little bit tricky is that to get that pose just right, it seemed like that, believe it or not, it's like the smallest model, but it took me the longest to build.
Yeah.
New Gene Stealer models, Hormigants, and a new Barbore / Pyrobore.
Praise be for the new Gene Stealers. the biggest wingspan on the smallest base was what they were for the majority of that model's existence. It was like a 40 mil footprint on a 25 mil base.
And
it was
a little just awkward.
Yeah, you know, they weren't stealers of genes. They were stealers of everything. Your models, your clothes, the terrain. Yeah.
The only thing that I think of when I see them is jazz hands.
Absolutely.
The new models look, you know, very similar to the old ones. So I don't think that you'd have to rush out maybe and replace all your gene stealers if you did not care to do so. But what you will want to do, just like you're talking about, is throw them on those 32 millimeter bases. Because anyway, they'll stand up probably a little more than they have for the last 30 years. This, and also we kind of hit light off of the fact that this is the first codex, and we're not sure what to expect. Like, what are you know, are we just going to be one detachment in there? What's going on? Like, is it going to change the rules from the index dramatically?
Yep.
I mean,
I had some assumptions. I had some guesses that you would get the thematic detachments in line with what the faction's known for. And if off the top of my head, I would have been like, yep, so there's an all-comers detachment in the one they got in the index, and maybe that's their theme for all the indexes, like the Gladius is the all-comers detachment for the Space Marines, etc. And then maybe we'll get big Gribblies detachment for Nids, and then maybe a Swarm detachment as well. And then they knocked it out of the freaking park and gave us, what, six?
Yeah.
Well, five more. Plus the invasion fleet, right?
Yeah, yep. And then also fully supported combat patrol rules built into the codex.
Wild. Wild. So much more than I thought.
Yep. Hey, God, it's almost like, where on earth do we start? You know, I think what people are going to be looking is like, can I play a whole army of like big creatures, big Tyranids? Well, there's certainly
answers yes, yeah.
That favors it. Yeah. Yeah, nothing new about necessarily like how to construct an army. Like everyone's still going to be playing on that same type of playing field with the kind of flexibility in which you can include in your detachments. But yeah, I don't know. You want to talk about the Crusher Stampede?
Oh, snap.
The name sends chills down my spine. And let us hope it is not the terror that their previous incarnation was.
maybe we're jumping ahead. Let's actually talk about like the army rules, like the synapse, which is if your army faction is Tyranids, while a Tyranids unit from your army is within 6 inches of one or more friendly synapse models, the Tyranids unit is said to be within a synapse range of that model and of your army. Each time a Tyranids unit from your army takes a battle shock test, if it's within synapse range, your army takes the test on 3d6 instead of 2d6. So, you know,
nice.
Working as intended there. Shadow of the Warp, if your army faction is Tyranids, once per battle in either player's command phase, if one or more units from your army with this ability are on the battlefield, you can unleash a Shadow in the Warp. When you do, each enemy unit on the battlefield must take a battle shock test.
So pretty much exactly, so that's exactly the same as it is now, which I mean is encouraging. That means, you know, they've linked up the codexes with the indexes, and so there is it's not going to be a huge learning curve adapting. And your time spent in index NIDs is not going to be wasted.
So the invasion fleet, that is the first detachment there, and then we can come back to that. The next one is the Crusher Stampede, which the detachment rule is Enraged Behemoths. Each time a Tyranid monster model from your army makes an attack, add 1 to the hit roll. If that model's unit is below the starting strength, add 1 to the wound roll as well. If that model's unit is below half strength.
That's an interesting one. Like, right? Yeah. So it previously used to be like just -1 damage was what it was in 9th edition, which was way too good. And now you actually, what the stampede starts when you start picking at the big Griblies. But the increased durability means that your Griblies stay alive a lot longer. It's not like it used to be where it's like, as soon as I could, no matter what it is in the game, as soon as I can see it, I just oath a moment, it's gone. And that might be true for one thing, you know, per turn now, but any chip damage,
sometimes.
Chip damage is detrimental. So I actually quite like that. It's like, if you've got a couple of bolt pistols, you're like, should I shoot the Carnifex? Or am I just going to power it up by making it angrier?
Yeah, give it, add 1 to the hit roll, which can be bad. The enhancements here, Ominous Presence. The Tyranid monster model only add 3 to the bear's objective control characteristic. I think that's going to be a sneaky one. I don't know how much OC has been affecting y'all's games, but it matters.
It does. I think it's may not be the most prevalent mechanic in the game, but it definitely matters in my opinion. I think, you know, especially what Paul with Blood Angels, right? Dante's ability to just battle shock folks. I think it has a lot of interesting play throughout the game, so it's good to see them trying to lean on it a little more.
Yeah, Enraged Reserves, Tyranid monster model only. If the bear is destroyed by a melee attack, if it has not fought this phase, roll a d6 on a 3+, do not remove it from the play. It can fight after the attacking model's unit has finished making its attacks, and then it is removed from play.
Nice.
Ah, man. Buying an enhancement and then having to roll for it. I don't typically have luck with those.
Well, that's some old. Where have we heard that before? I hate. Wasn't that one of our favorite sayings? I hate paying CP for a chance.
Yeah.
Like, I'd rather play more CP for a certainty. Like, I used to be me with the Black Templars, 4+ to deny, turn off a psychic ability. I'm like, I'd rather play 2 to just have it not happen than pay 1 and feel like a goof when I fail the essentially the coin flip.
Yeah.
So you're right there.
So the Null Nodules is the next one. Tyranid monster only. Once per battle, when the psychic attack is allocated to the bear, it can use this ability. If it does, until the end of the phase, the bear has a feel no pain 5+ against psychic attacks. Remember, that's not just smites. That could be anything with the psychic keyword. Monstrous Nemesis is the next one. Tyranid monster only. Each time the bear makes a melee attack that targets a monster or vehicle, add 1 to the wound roll.
I like it.
Would stack. Yeah, that would stack with the Enraged Behemoth, right?
Surely.
Add 1 to the wound roll if you're below half strength, and then add 1 for Monstrous Nemesis.
But you can't stack them, right? You can only get +1 to the wound roll.
You can at a time. Yeah. That's what I was. Yep. That's my asking is like, does that stack?
Yeah,
probably not.
Yeah, +1s to hit and to wound and things like that nature don't go above +1 or -1. And so that would only be really valuable if you're fighting something that is -1 to wound already. Which, you know, there are things like that in the meta at the moment. I think is it Lich Guard that have -1 to wound?
Yeah, but I would also like to not be below half strength. So, you know, maybe you always pack there the monster's nemesis. You know, so you don't have to worry about that.
The orcs -1 to wound stratagem comes in real hot. So actually being able to stack those in order to negate that is pretty cool.
Like that. Getting into the stratagems, each one of the detachments has its own stratagem package as well. Corrosive Viscera. When in your opponent's shooting phase or the fight phase, just after a Tyranid monster model from your army with a deadly demise ability that cannot fly is destroyed, you can use a stratagem on that model even though it was just destroyed. Do not roll a d6 to determine whether the mortal wounds are inflicted inflicted by your model's deadly demise. Instead, mortal wounds are automatically inflicted.
Auto boom. That's kind of cute.
That's something we don't see right now.
I love that they've had the foresight to not put it on something with wings, so you can't just slap it in a harpy on a harpy and just fly it right into your opponent's lines with that huge base and or wingspan. I actually don't know what the does the demise come off the wing or come off the base for measuring. I actually don't know which with aircraft.
So. That's a good question.
If it is off the wings, dear God, no. It's like half the table.
Well, thankfully the designers have thought about that. We don't have to worry about, but that's a 1 CP stratagem. Another 1 CP, rampaging monstrosities in the fight phase. One Tyranid monster unit from your army that has not been selected to fight until the end of the phase. Each time a model in the unit makes an attack, you can reroll the hit roll.
That seems really good.
Especially for 1 CP.
It's really good. Yeah, and it's not just like rerolls of one, and it's not failed hits. So if for some reason you need to fish for, I don't know, lethal hits or whatever, like, just pick it all up, reroll it.
Like that. Savage War, the next one. Target Tyranid monster unit from your army that was selected as the target of one or more attacks. Attacking units attacks. The enemy must take a battle shock test until the end of the phase. Each time a model in the enemy unit makes an attack that targets your unit, subtract one from the hit roll. If that battle shock was failed, subtract one from the wound roll as well. I don't mind that.
I like it.
Untrammeled ferocity. I have to quickly look up what trammeled means.
Red, what does that mean?
Yeah, man.
Untrammeled.
I feel like you have the biggest vocabulary out of all of us. Wow. So that's why I'm that's why formally, I'm referring to you.
So the flavor text here is encircling and entrappling such physically powerful and fearless beast is nigh on impossible.
Yeah, it's untrammeled, unhindered, unrestricted, whatever. It falls in that vein of synonyms.
There we go. So one Tyranid monster from your army that has not been selected to move this phase until the end of the phase, models in your unit can move through enemy models as if they were friendly models. And until the end of the phase, any desperate escape test those models must take are automatically passed. That's one CP.
Yep.
Next one is swarm guided salvos. One Tyranid monster unit from your army that has not been selected to shoot until the end of the phase. Range weapons equipped by this model and unit have the ignores cover ability. And until the end of the phase, each time the model and unit makes an attack, you can ignore any and all modifiers to that model's ballistic skill characteristic or any or all modifiers to the hit roll. Got to be some maybe indirect fire monsters in there somewhere.
Yeah, does that work on the Biovores, you're thinking?
When we get there. Massive Impact is the last one here. Tyranid Monster, select one enemy unit with an engagement range of your model. Roll 66 for each 4+, the unit suffers one mortal wound. That's when you charge.
Yeah, that is an OG stratagem for the Crusher Stampede.
Yeah.
They've had that forever.
Hammer of Wrath. Other detachments in here, Unending Swarm, Assimilation Swarm, Vanguard Onslaught.
Just give us the what's the flavor, if they got a flavor text for what these are, because from the name it could be a couple of different kind of Nid archetypes that they're trying to push.
Actually, we can talk about the detachment rule, and that will probably kind of influinfluence, you know, what
absolutely that'll tell us everything.
Yeah, so let me go back up here to the Unending Swarm. Insurmountable odds. Well, here it actually has the flavor text. When Hormogons and Termagons and other such expendable warrior organisms attack en masse, they make up for their comparative fragility with sheer numbers, coupled with the speed and ferocity of their onslaught, which only seems to increase as the prey try to gun the creatures down or drive them back. The gathered broods soon overrun even the most determined defenders.
Well, there you go. That said everything already. It's the little guys, the Gribos.
Yeah, so the Assimilation Swarm. Even as the beasts of the Assimilation Swarm stalk across the battlefield, they make use of the abundant biomass yielded by the prey's world's slow demise. Warrior organisms heal even the most grievous wounds in moments, or stagger upright and return to the fight after they seem slain. A strain of revolting vitality flows through the Tyranid broods as though leached direct from their dismayed victims.
So, I mean, from that, you kind of get the impression that the more biomass they harvest, the more they kind of resurrect their models or heal their models.
There are harvester models. It's a harvester keyword in here. And this
Harvispex?
The harvester. Yeah. A harvester. We'll get to that.
Is that the Turvagon with the vacuum instead of the gestation? So she kind of just like dustpans up the guardsmen.
We'll see if the warriors have that on there.
Someone model that. Do it.
So the Vanguard Onslaught is the, you know, during the earliest stages of the Terran invasion, the rare bioform Imperial observers have named Death Leaper has been seen fulfilling a leadership and coordination role amongst the swarms, imploring pheromone trails and goading imperatives. The creature provides guidance to other warrior organisms. That is the localized equivalent of synaptic control.
So that would seem to be supercharging your brain bugs.
Yeah. Well, the Death Leaper is a neat model. That's the one that has the seeming like battle skirt or duster, trench coat type.
Duster.
Yeah.
When you say
out there.
And you actually said in the green room, Paul, that the duster was kind of the hardest bit to get right on the model.
Yeah, when you're building it, so it went together pretty easy, and it's one of those to where you could assemble it off the base. The base is one of those that has like pipes and it's like a little scenic element to it, so you stand it up on top of like a wrecked, like some kind of pump or think something with tubes and pipes and stuff in it. And
yep.
I kept them off the base and built it. And it wasn't like tricky, but if you're not careful with the way that the battle skirt assembles, it kind of slots into little grooves under like on his butt in the back of his thighs. And there is on mine, I think it may have been because I was using plastic glue, maybe moving kind of fast, that there's a little bit of separation. I'm looking at it now, and now that it's painted, you can't see it. But before I was painting it, or when the process of me painting it, I was like, man, this might be an issue. But just be mindful of that when you are assembling the model. If you're using a slow drying glue to probably hold it in there until you get a little bit of a cure, so you don't have that gap. So that's my advice. Otherwise, it went together pretty smooth. So this one is bigger than the Lictor and went together probably twice as fast, not quite as, but still not even quite as fast as the Emissary. Emissary got built in no time.
That's good to know. I look at all the bits and pieces on its back, and I just think that's going to be a pain. But man, the innovations that they've made in miniature construction are phenomenal. I actually built Grimaldus, Helbrecht 2 days ago, and I was just blown away by how little effort it took to build what looks to be a super complex setup with like the little dudes, the sword polisher and the gun handler and stuff like that.
Oh, that's nice. With this, and when I say none of these took a crazy amount of time, but with the Lictor, it's got different ways, the different poses you can configure its like arm hooks or whatever, shoulder claws. What are the best way to describe those? The impaler things coming off its carapace.
Definitely. Shoulders. That's what it has on the whiteboard. The impaler things.
Impaler themy-doos. Is that when it hinges off from like the second segment of it before he gets out to the actual spiky claw part, there's like a different piece for that to position it to whatever pose you're going for. And then figuring out how that like slotted into his little spot probably took the longest of anything. And that may be user error, but just know that, you know, they all went together pretty smooth. And the Death Leaper, that little part for me, it was the part under its left leg. That piece was, I guess I just wasn't being as careful as maybe I should have. And again, now that it's painted, I'm looking at it right now. You can't even tell, but it was bothering me before I painted it. So just if like me, those types of things bother you, be careful when you're putting it together. Let's see what else we got here. The Synaptic Nexus. The leader beast of these swarms act as conduits to the will of the hive mind. Irresistible imperatives lash out from them like whips that drive lesser bioforms to hurl themselves at the prey, to fight on through fatal wounds, or to attack with redoubled savagery. Stuff with Tyranid Psykers in that one, if you might imagine. Here's a pretty good one. This is one of the enhancements. So the Dirge Heart of Karras. It's an aura. Tyranid Synapt models only.
Sounds cool.
Yeah, while an enemy unit is within 9 inches of the bearer, worsen the unit's leadership characteristic by one.
Surprisingly handy with Shadow in the Warp. You need to flip an objective, pop your Shadow in the Warp once per game. While they're all within range of this, they're on battle shocks at, you know, possibly even other negatives you can stack.
Yeah, so with the Synapse creatures, we'll talk about some of those. What is Synapse? Maybe what isn't? But let's talk about a data slate. Actually, let's take a quick break, and then we'll come back and talk about some data slates. Because I definitely want to talk about some of these new, previously unseen units. See you in a minute.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
Everybody, we are back. I want to give a very special shout out to our sponsors and our patrons on Patreon. It means a whole lot. Thanks for contributing and doing that. It's how we get to bring you the show. And you're checking out our sponsors and some of the other things. It means a whole lot to us. And that is, you know, one of the things that keeps us going each and every week. Thanks again. Every tier is awesome. Anyway, if you decided to join us there, really do appreciate it. Thank you very, very much. Norn Emissary. The model, awesome. I think, is bigger than it's looking like on the Wyrm community site.
How big is it? Because I can't tell.
It's awesome. It doesn't matter.
They've got a picture of it next to a
Wraith Lord.
A Wraith Lord. Yeah, and the Wraith Lord comes up to about its chin.
Yeah.
I guess.
Yeah, that seems about right.
Middle of its eyes. But then it's like its back extends way up, you know, with the pipes and the chimneys or whatever they're called. Chimneys, and what you're saying, like you're saying it's more than that?
Even bigger in person.
That's the best size, or that is right. That is what it is. If you know what a Wraith Lord is, or the size of a Wraith Lord, you are correct. But I don't think previously, before that frame of reference, that you got a really good idea of just how big it is.
Like, I will say, next to the Wraith Lord, this guy looks thick.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very, very thick.
Yeah. As previously mentioned, it did go together like a dream, and you know, I was painted up pretty quickly, and the brains on it, I did.
Yep.
I used athermetic blue, like a real thin down athermetic blue contrast. Looks pretty good with the purple and Leviathan scheme.
I always love the brain bit, like the exposed brain, because to me that's the equivalent of a Tyranid not wearing the helmet. Just like.
Here we go.
So
yeah, I know. But it
can't do that anymore.
It demonstrates the purpose of the monster. It demonstrates the purpose and the characteristics of the miniature and the model. So I understand it, because there's no reason that a Space Marine shouldn't wear their helmet. There's like I want them to see the whites of my eyes. None of that stuff. But when the hive ships like deploy the emissary, they're like, this Gribbly is pretty important. We should probably have its brain exposed. I adore it.
The brains look, you know,
they're
very
fantastic.
Similar.
They look awesome.
Yeah. So this leads me to the questions. Like, so the Tyranid brain, did it do like all brains throughout all galaxies look similar to this, or is this an evolution after it's consumed human biomass?
That's a good one. That's a very good one. You're saying if it like ate a bunch of like sentient earthworms, it would have a trail of like 8 or 9 little brains up its head instead of like one big one.
I mean, that's my question. That is my question.
It's like, fascinating. Fascinating question. I love it.
If anybody knows, you know, let us know.
If there's like a tiny little bit of flavor text on like the Doom of Malentai from eons editions ago, it just says it got this way by eating this and this on a strict diet of breadcrumbs and diplomatic emissaries. I don't know.
Human toes.
Rogue traders. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, same with the Zonthrope, I guess, which is floating brain. So the Norn Emissary, you've seen the stats on the Wyrm community site, movement of 10, toughness 11, which folks are like, man, you know, 12 seems to be that magic number. Is 11 going to be good enough? 2+ save, 4+ invulnerable, 16 wounds though, so that's pretty good.
Does it have a feel no pain?
No feel no pain. Well, okay, so sort of. At the start of the first battle round, select one of the following. Select one enemy unit until the end of the battle. Each time this model makes an attack, the target that targets that unit, you can reroll the hit roll and you can reroll the wound roll. And another thing it can do, the singular purpose of which you start, select one objective marker until the end of the battle. While this model is within range of that objective marker, it has a feel no pain of 5+ and the objective control characteristic of 15. So that is quite the improvement over the 5 it starts with when you're on your preferred objective, if you've chosen that to be your singular purpose.
I love that one. I think that one is the money. Picking that as just like the middle objective.
Yeah.
Going first and just full sending it onto it. You're like, if you cannot kill this efficiently and quickly, the game is over. You are going to be blocked out. I think it's a really powerful thing to do. I wonder if there are restrictions on this, because you could, you know, theoretically you take 3 of them and then on turn 1, I don't know how quickly these guys move, but theoretically, let's say there's an ability
10 inches move is the base.
Yeah, so with an advance, yeah, you can make midboard objectives. Let's say you're playing in like a table quarters. I think it's assert and destroy where you're 9 inches from the center, one, and then only a couple. You have three of them, and first turn advance. Okay, so the one that's going up to the left one picks that objective, one on the bottom right picks that one, one that's going to middle picks that one, and bang, 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 you got one on all three middle objectives with 15 OC, toughness 11, two up, 16 wounds with a four up, five up, feel no pain. Four up involve, five for no pain. Just like, lol. Yeah. You've only got one oath a moment, baby. Let's see.
A little bit of more on the feel no pain is that the model has a 4+ feel no pain against mortal wounds.
That's not bad either.
Yeah.
Wait, all mortal wounds?
Yeah.
All mortal wounds.
Feel no pain, 4+ ability against mortal wounds.
Ooh. So legitimately, it doesn't die to a Wraith Knight activation. It does a single Wraith Knight activation, unless they spike like crazy on the roulette wheel of sixes, does not kill this thing in one go.
No, they don't have to roll dice.
Well, no, because they get 1 6, and the roulette wheel is how many other sixes
they get.
Okay. Yeah, the roulette wheel, if they get 3 6s, I'm sorry, there's not, nobody, you know, did you bring a Warhound Titan? Maybe, you know? Nothing gets through that if they manage to rip, like, 3 6s off the Wraith Cannons. But one or two, theoretically, this guy makes it through. Like, because, like, you know, 4d6, if it gets 2 6s, only on average is 14 wounds, is not enough to kill this guy, and then it still gets the 4+ in addition. So there is some, I mean, I actually love that ability. Holy crap. I want to see how many points this guy is now.
Yeah. 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 We'll get there. We'll get there. ranged weapons, it's not an epic hero, by the way. I think you were mentioning, can you have more than one? And it is not.
Yes. That's pretty much what I was yeah. An oof, epic hero. Okay. Exciting. Crusher Stampede, triple emissary. Let's go.
So it has three different profiles on its ranged attack. They're all 18 inches, though. They're psychic tendrils. One is a neuroparasite, neuroblast, neurolance. The neuroparasite is two attacks, hits on twos, strength 8, neg 2, AP, D3 damage. The neuroblast is a blast psychic attack. These are all psychic attacks, by the way. 18 inch, 2d6 attacks, strength 6, neg 2, 1 damage, and then a melta neurolance, which gives you two attacks, hitting on two, strength 12, AP, neg 3, d6 damage. So I don't know if that's a powerhouse in the combat ability, the shooting ability. But for his melee weapons, monstrous scything talons, 6 attacks, hits on 2+, strength 9, neg 2 AP, 3 damage apiece, and has rending claws as extra attacks, gets 4 extra attacks, strength 7, neg 2, 2 damage.
I mean, that sounds pretty respectable.
Yeah. Let me get the points on this. Points as printed in the codex. Well, please stand by.
are they even in the codex anymore? I thought they're coming out for free on the in the PDF.
I think that for points, tell you what, actually, just they are in the codex, but let me also state that you probably should just look in the app for points, for whatever that is, and also saves me some searching at the moment. Let's get to the Norn Assimilator. This is the other side of that kit. It's a creepy looking model too.
Yeah, I assume that the emissary is the brain bark, more synapse holding everything together, kind of bug, and the assimilator is possibly the killing machine version.
So movement 10, toughness 11, 2+ save, 16 wounds, has a OC of 5, and it has a toxin injector harpoon range weapon, which is 12 inch range, 2 attacks, hits on 2s, strength 12, neg 3 AP, D6 plus 1 damage, harpooned after the bear has shot with this weapon, select one enemy monster or vehicle unit hit by one of those attacks until the end of the turn. Each time the bear selects that unit as a target of a charge, add 2 to the charge roll.
That's cool.
I do like that. So it also has a singular purpose. At the start of the first battle round, you can do the same thing. Basically, you can reroll hit rolls, or you can reroll, and you can reroll the wound roll, or select one objective markers, and you get a 5+ final pain, and the OC characteristic of 15. Then here's the harpoon barbs. Once per turn, when an enemy unit within engagement range of this model is selected to fall back, roll a D6 on a 2+. The unit suffers D6 mortal wounds.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's spicy.
Yeah, and his melee weapons, it has a total of 10 attacks, 6 of those from his main profile, 4 from extra attacks. Strength 9, AP 2, 3 damage, and then the toxin injector harpoon that gives you the extra attacks is strength 12, neg 3, d6 plus 1 damage. I kind of like that its extra attacks thing is way beefier. That is like primary attacks. So that is the Norn Assimilator.
I think it wouldn't even matter all the words you just said. The model is so cool, people are going to buy it. I legitimately think they're good. I think they are good. I think there are abilities there that make them very enticing. As long as the points make sense, And like I said, even if the points don't make sense, like Tyranid players are going to be like, holy crap, that is such a good model.
Well, I went with the Emissary more because I love the idea of the Norn Queen, you know, as from ancient Tyranid lore.
Yep.
And, you know, this thing somehow connected to that lore was cool. Like, good enough for me.
Well, so from what I see this guy doing, this model doing, as in, like, because I think the second ability is much better, the one where you pick an objective marker, mm-hmm. and then it goes OC 15. In addition, the durability of the model goes up by a third. Legitimately just goes up by a third because of the five, I feel no pain. So I like the Emissary better because it gets the invulnerable save. As long as the points aren't too disparaging between the two. Like, I mean, if this thing's 120 points more, then, you know, my argument goes out the window. But having the invulnerable save plus the feel no pain, and then because did you say that the Emissary has the psychic attacks here?
Yes.
So the Emissary is like has better range on their attacks. That the harpoon on the
12 inches
on the simulator is like, don't come within 12. Whereas the the psychic tendrils is range 18.
Move 10 though. So I mean, you do have
it's true
range. But I'm with you that on your point that
yeah. But the way I see it happening is that so in my head, just off these abilities, sorry, is that you get your Emissary or simulator onto an objective, and then force your opponent to do something they don't want to do to try and come and get rid of it. Whilst you're playing, you know, you got lictors, you got little gribblies, you got gargoyles playing, I guess, defense or body block or shenanigans, stopping them from getting to that objective. Mm-hmm. And then when they get there, they've got high toughness, feel no pain, invulnerable save, and 15 OC to dig through to try and get it back. So in my head, that sounds really appealing to me. That's a really cool way to play.
That 15 OC is going to be a problem. And it's such a big difference than with some of the other things. Like, so the Swarm Lord is also in here, as you might expect, but it is an epic hero. So only one Swarm Lord per army.
How long do you think it is before people put swords on their Emissary and say, yo, here's my Swarm Lord model?
Go for it.
They don't shape up to each other at all. I'm sorry to the Swarm Lord and the old Hive Tyrants, but you have been superseded by the new grandeur of the Norn.
So, I mean, you could build your models however you want. That'd be yours, right? But the head of the Assimilator is pretty aggressive. Like, the head on the Emissary is obviously like I'm a brain bug type creature or whatever, but it comes with a complete other head for the Assimilator. Like, you can get kind of creative with this, with mixing up other parts and stuff. So kitbash to your heart's content. I do think this Warlord is kind of a beast in combat, though. Still, 8 attacks, strength 9, neg 2, 3 damage apiece. At start of your command phase, if this model is on the battlefield, you gain 1 command point, so it gives you an extra command point. Then Malign Presence once per battle after your opponent uses a stratagem. If this model is your Warlord and is on the battlefield, it can use this ability. If it does, until the end of the battle, increase the stratagem cost of your opponent's seat by 1 CP.
So that's an effect-like ability?
Yes.
Which we should say is like a colloquialism that people have adopted since 8th edition, which was when you used to have a command point that would make other people's stratagems cost more command points and or deny them. Like, you would spend 3 CP and just say, no, your stratagem does not happen. And so that was called Vect. And so since then, we've had this term called Vect for anything that would mess with your opponent's CP expenditure. So, sorry, that was confusing to new players.
And that's just an ability.
Good old times of Vect.
Yeah.
Yes.
The Swarm Lord gets. Like, you don't need to spend anything to do that.
Yeah. It used to be so funny. Sorry. It used to be so funny when, like, psychologically, you'd spend your 3 CP and just slap the stratagem card out of your opponent's hand and say, no, you don't get to fight twice, shoot twice, or whatever else you were going to do. Vect says, no, sir. It was always so funny.
Rude.
It was rude. I loved it.
That's pretty funny. So what do you want to get to now? So the Death Leaper. We should talk about the Death Leaper.
Well, I actually think we should talk about what you should do. Like, what kind of color schemes do we like? I know that G-Dub is really pushing the Leviathan color scheme because, of course, they're in the starter box.
Y'all heard me talk about a couple weeks ago about that, how I found a pretty like low-tech Leviathan color scheme to pull off, and it's repeatable. So it's not hard to do.
All right. So I'm little Jimmy, and I've just gotten my Leviathan box. I've got my half of Leviathan. I'm going to run out. I'm going to buy a lot of the new kits. What do you reckon is the easiest way to get this army up to scratch?
That's a good question.
And ready for play.
Open to ideas.
So here's what I would do. If I want to get it done fast, I would buy a black rattle can primer. And then I think I would buy a white rattle can primer. I would prime the whole thing black, right? And then I would just 45 degree angle around the mini with the white, and then I would just slap some contrast paint on however my heart desired. Done.
That's pretty. So when you're saying the 45 degree angle, you mean trying to spray the underbelly? Because, I mean, all you can really break down a NID model to being the carabase portion and then kind of the underbelly, the everything else portion.
No.
You got the kind of the fleshy bit or whatnot. Is that what you're getting at?
No. You just you just prime the whole thing black, and that's going to be your shadows.
Oh, I get you. Yeah.
And then you're going to essentially hit from above with the white at a 45 degree angle down.
Like so a highlight.
On everything. Yeah, like that does your highlight. And then when you put the contrast paint on, it does all the work.
Yeah, I get you now. So you're doing like a zenithal highlight from an angle. You're picking a light source from an angle, which is where which is what the light is. You've already done all the shadows, and then when you apply the contrast, it already has layers to it, already has depth to it.
That's right. And then if you want to, you can dry brush it on top, or you could edge highlight it if you want to. But really, you don't have to.
Nice. Yeah, it would already be like tabletop ready.
That's right.
Nice. Like, and yeah, exactly right. Then you can kind of just take your time, pick out like gun bits and sacks of things and like nails, like claws and stuff. That's cool. Right.
I actually think that technique doesn't work as well on like vehicles, and it doesn't work very well on like power armor for Marines. But as soon as you put it on something that's like an organic kind of creature, it looks so good.
Yeah, fully endorsed.
You're legitimately right. And so, some of the best schemes I've seen for NIDs are the simplest ones. Like, it's just two colors executed really well and then spot details. It seems to be that NIDs are just so good for that. And I think we overlook NIDs when we talk about, what are the easiest armies to paint and get onto the tabletop? We talk about custodies now, where you just like Rattlecan, wash or dip or whatever to add depth, and you're good to go. Tyranids really is into that conversation, isn't it? Like, same as Necrons as well. Lol, silver spray, lol, null, go. You know?
I think another way that you could do it is you could, at least for the carapace, I think it would be really cool if you just painted it silver and then you either put contrast or an acrylic ink on top to sort of like make it. You've ever seen those shiny beetles?
Yes.
That are like kind of iridescent, and it kind of gives that kind of look to it. So I would actually use, probably instead of a wash, I wouldn't use a Citadel wash. I think I'd use an ink.
There are the glaze, the gloss washes, which I actually, when I did a small Tyranid force ages ago, and I actually, when those first came out, and I actually used those to wash the carapace, and it came out pretty good. It took about, because I did Lamy in it down quite a bit because I found it was too strong out of the pot, and then because I wanted a bit more control, so I did like, I ended up doing two, sometimes three coats of that when I put a couple of drops of Lamy in into like, it's more like, I'd say probably a 4-to-1, like one drop of Lamy and four drops of the gloss shade, and it worked pretty well. Like, it worked pretty well. I mean, I think you can get a much quicker effect with the inks, but that product is out there for you if you need it.
I like that. You get that texture, whatever texture you want, whatever sheen you want, and go for whatever colors you want. That is a quick way to get some of those details to show up exactly like you were talking about, Tanya. And that is, like, I don't want to say low skill or low effort, but it is one of those things that you can definitely do with limited number of products.
And it's fast. Like, if you just bought all these new models and you can't wait to play with them and you really just want to get them painted to like a pretty good standard, I think both of those techniques gets it done fast and it gets it so that everybody will come up to the table and just tell you how great it looks anyway.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful stopping point for like, they're done enough, but then you haven't done anything that's going to stop you going back and doing more whenever you want. Like, it's just a midway point of like, yep, this is tabletop. I mean, I think so many different paint ranges have systems set up to get you to that point. And then, you know, here's the extension, here's the highlights, the edge colors, the et cetera, to go further. And what Tanya just described, I think, is even better because of the zenithal, the pre-shade almost is what you got, a lot of people call it. Gives you an even better launching point to go to push your models further later when you get time.
Very nice. Try that. Let us know how y'all do out there. The Death Leaper. Death Leaper is an advancement of the Lictor strain.
Really?
To act as a terror weapon. Yep. You don't say. This thing has a lot of abilities. So the abilities is fights first, infiltrators, ooh, lone operative, and stealth.
Spicy.
It's good.
Yeah, and synapse. So movement of 8, toughness 6, 3 plus save with a 4 plus invulnerable save, 7 wounds, 7 leadership, 1 OC, you know, so that might need some help. So feeder tendrils. Each time this model destroys an enemy character model, you gain 1 CP. Fear of the Unseen, which is an aura. While an enemy unit is within 6 inches of this model, worse than the leadership characteristic of models in that unit by 1. In addition, in the battle shock step of your opponent's command phase, if such an enemy unit is below its starting strength, it must take a battle shock test. So if you're within 6 inches, and even if you're not normally going to take a battle shock test, if you're below your starting strength, you will.
And I love units like this that are kind of like a toolkit that give you a bunch of different ways to which sort of interact with your opponent's models. I really, really like this.
So six attacks. I
think it's a great point out when a unit has modality. Like, even though you look at Death Leap and you're like, okay, this is predominantly a melee unit, but you look at what it can still do, even if you don't want to send it in. Like, it has a really good like that. You know, with things with the stealth and the infiltrate and the lone op and all those things.
Hanging on an objective somewhere. I mean, yeah, the lone operative for a model that's this big is pretty cool.
Mm.
That's going to frustrate your opponent. That might be worth taking all by itself. 6 attacks, hitting on 2, strength 7, -2 AP, 2 damage piece. It's not quite a powerhouse. It is an epic hero, though, so you only take one.
I just really see this as being so versatile and, like, for many different things, right? It's not a super huge threat, but with infiltrate, you can just throw it on an objective and, like, your opponent has to deal with it.
It has to go all the way wherever it is and deal with it too. Like,
exactly,
deal with it easily from some kind of range.
This is going to be so annoying for people to deal with, and I kind of love it.
Yeah, agreed. The exocrine is right next to this thing in the codex, so we might as well talk about it as well. The bioplasmic cannon, heavy blast, 36-inch range, D6 plus 3 shots, strength 8, -3 AP, 3 damage apiece. Its special rule is the symbiotic targeting. In your shooting phase, after this model has shot, select one enemy unit hit by one or more of those attacks until the end of the phase. Each time a friendly Tyranid model makes an attack that targets that unit, reroll hit roll of 1.
Nice.
Yeah, so now it's a little bit of buff. I like it when when a model can buff the rest of your army.
By doing something it was going to do anyway.
Yeah, great point. Some of the new models, the Biovores, the Lictors, which are cool.
I do really like the new take on Bivores, having it as like a crab beast with a gun on its back. I think that's pretty cool.
Zoanthropes, still a thing. Who doesn't like Zoanthropes?
I think they're oddly cute.
What about it? No good. I'm extremely interested to hear this one, Tanya. What about him makes him cute?
Why is it cute?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just like, okay, so you know how like it's got a big head, right?
Yep, right? A fallen.
All right. So like whenever you look at a baby creature and it's cute, it's always got a, like its head is
it's
just
true.
Giant.
It's smiling too.
It's like
right?
Yeah, sure.
It's cute. It's like a little baby. It's got like this like tiny useless body and this like giant cute smiling head. Come on now.
The Biovores. So 48-inch range, D3 attacks, hits on 4s, strength 6, -1 AP, 2 damage. Spore.
Does it still makes spore mines?
Seed spore mines. Once per turn in your shooting phase, when selected to shoot, one unit with this ability can use it instead of making any attacks with its ranged weapons. If it does, you can add one new spore mines unit to your army and set it up anywhere on the battlefield that is wholly within 48 inches of this unit and more than 9 inches horizontally away from all enemy units.
Keep going.
It's one spore mine unit contains one model for each in this unit.
They wholly within 48 inches of it?
Yeah.
So the range of the gun. Yeah, I was really hoping that there would be another paragraph added to that, being like, this unit can never score primary objectives, secondary objectives, cannot have OC, and you can walk through it. I really prayed for something like that, because it's one of the... It's the best. It's having one unit that makes another unit at freaking essentially on a shortened board, which you got in 9th edition, infinite range of the table. They can just score you points. Like I was at the
spore mines are OC0.
Yeah, so they can't contest primary, and I was incorrect to say that they could, but they still get your teleport homers. They still get behind enemy lines, engage in all front. They still count for so many other things. And I saw a lot of people at the top level of the game, the WTC, taking two Biovores and then playing fixed objectives, which were being so two single Biovores playing behind enemy lines and deploy teleport homers, and every turn they just shoot two Biovores, two 25 mil base spore mines into your object, into your lines. One of them does teleport homers, and you max your secondaries whilst never leaving your deployment zone if you don't want to. And I'm just like, please, can we just delete spore mines? Delete the whole mechanic. We've never been able to get it right in the entire lexicon of the game. There's always been a point in every edition where spore mines are too good. let's freaking delete them, or make it so they can never score template? You any points.
Were you playing when they would do the flamer template AI near them and they just roast you with a flamer template?
Yes. It was like pick the place you would like to torrent from, sir, within range of the gun. It was rough. And yeah, like I said, I mean, use it while you got it, Tyranny players. I will not besmirch anyone using the things in their codex that they think are good and give them the modality and play on the table. Yeah. But for the love of everything, let's make them fair and balanced at some point.
So with the Tyranids, we're only basically scratching the surface here. We have not talked about all the different detachments you can do and all the various nuances and how that's going to affect the builds. But I will say I'm loving the new models. I think the codex is good.
If G-Dub continue on the train that they're on, we won't be the ugly stepchild in the model comparison between 40K and AOS, because they are knocking it out of the freaking park with these sculpts.
That's funny. There are some really nice AOS sculpts out there.
I mean, the thing is, though, you try and find the bad AOS sculpt. And whereas for a while, especially in 8th edition and 9th edition of 40K, it was try and find the good 40K sculpt, where it was try to find the bad AOS sculpt. I mean, whatever is relevant about the games and the rules and whatever, but you can't deny the AOS range, holistically, is gorgeous.
Oh, have you seen the new Cities of Sigmar stuff? Oh my goodness, those... they are next level in terms of detail. Chef's kiss.
As a Guardsman player, I didn't think I could get more excited for a humanoid or a basic human. You know, I didn't think I could get excited for a basic human model anymore. And then they went and did it. The knights that they have for Sigmar, oh my God.
The whole slew of them. I mean, the character that they have, several of those characters are amazing. And I think that, especially with some of the stuff that's come out between the Inquisitorial henchmen and everything, I could see some pretty amazing kit bashes in the future using those models to tie into Imperial Guard and whatnot.
I basically have to get every cool looking human that the game makes.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, even more than that, I have ideas in my head for Horus Heresy models using using some of those knights. So I play Dark Angels, and my Dark Angels are traitors, and they're very recalcitrant. They're hidebound and want to go back to the glory days of Caliban. And the Knights of the Order before the Lion literally were just like medieval knights with like rudimentary power armor with like explosive tipped lances, baby bolt guns, and chainswords. And essentially, they, in my head, if I did a little bit of a kit bash and a little bit of a conversion on some of those knights, I reckon I could make them to be like Knights of Old Caliban. And that excites the hell out of me.
Oh, that sounds
you could
fun.
Use like the weapons from the Rough Riders. They have those like explosive tipped
exactly right.
spears. Yeah.
Yeah, and then just get some like little old bolt pistols, because there are some really small bolt pistols from the original Horus Heresy kits that they're quite scaled down now. Whereas these guys would be Space Marine sized, but riding like big old genetically enhanced horses, which is kind of the scale I'm getting from these dudes. And then chuck those little bolt pistols on them, get them like old school. I was thinking even the Caradhran Overlords have some pretty archaic looking chainswords.
Totally.
Could go there for those as well. And man, that idea excites all of me.
Got to follow those dreams.
That's right, man.
That's our Tyranid like teaser at the moment. I mean, this
we finished up talking about Cities of Sigmar.
It's a journey.
Yeah.
So every episode, Odyssey.
How many Cities of Sigmar army sets does it take to kill a Norn emissary? Let's find out.
But I'm looking to see how people react to the codex. You know, if it sets up what we're going to see with like Marines, in the future. Who knows? But I think they're on the right track with everything. That's our episode this week. It is a pleasure hanging out.
Had a bit of everything, guys.
Yeah. Tune in to the coverage on the Games Workshop Twitch page for the Nova Open Grand Tournament. You might hear some familiar voices, mine being one of them.
just to make it absolutely sure.
It's me. I'm going to be there. I'm going to be talking about Warhammer. And I would love it if y'all joined us.
It should be a phenomenal weekend of 40K. Can the Eldari Menace continue its path of destruction through the landscape of Index 40K, or will a new hero arise to topple the kingpin of the early days of 10th edition? I can't wait to find out.
There we go. We'll see y'all soon, everybody. Thanks for listening. We'll be back. You'll hear from us ASAP. Have a good night, everybody.
See ya.
Bye-bye.
Our craft worlds are sentient beings. These hosts are not. Better luck next time, monkeys!